adopting a report, because as I was listening to Commissioner Fritz's points, I was having a hard time remembering a time where we amended a strategic plan in this forum. And so, and it may be because in the past we've accepted and then had a dialogue about any changes. So I just, first, could you tell us what the difference between accepting and adopting is?
I will speak loudly. If you want me to come up to...
Sorry. This is more of our technology upgrade.
There we go.
We'll do this one.
Hey, thank you, Carla. We'll
see. That working?
Okay. Yes.
There's nothing in our charter or codes dealing with what does it mean to accept or adopt a resolution. So I think we end up going to the dictionary meanings of those. I think in practice, often we accept a report if the intent is not to council to implement directly. I've mostly seen these reports accepted rather than adopted. I could go back and look at for examples if you want. So I can't give you a direct answer, but I've seen it mostly as accept as well.
Yeah, so I thank you for that. And it's my recollection that we typically accept and not adopt. And Mayor, Commissioner Fritz makes a number of very eloquent points that relate to the document. My own preference is that we not as a body, as a legislative body, amend a report like this on the fly, because particularly where there's been an extraordinary amount of public process that results in such a document, my preference would be that we accept the report as the work product of the Bureau, and then the Council continue the process of following up on concerns they have with the Bureau, and that could lead to a resolution or an ordinance to follow.
I like that suggestion. I hope that's acceptable to you. It also seems to me that it leaves the ability to modify the document clearly in the hands of the Bureau leadership, obviously advised by council, by this council, maybe that one too. But therefore, as we add specificity to some of these provisions, doesn't require that we come back to council and amend anything.
So it's I could pose my question to Commissioner Fritz. Commissioner Fritz, if we were to amend the language in our agenda to say accept rather than adopt, would you accept that amendment?
Yes, thank you.
Well, I offer Mayor that amendment now.
Okay.
Second.
Okay, the amendment is moved and seconded. Let's vote on the amendment and then we'll continue.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, so that's how it's before the council now. Other comments?
Yes, Jack, I just wanted to comment on, well, I think this is an aspect of quality customer service strategy 1.1, communicate how citywide interests are served through rules, regulations, and processes. And in the briefing the other day, you were explaining how you've discovered in a review of contracts where the city got into trouble that sometimes the trouble wouldn't have arisen if the boilerplate that the city normally has in its contracts was kept, but the Bureau didn't see the reason for that piece of boilerplate, so they deleted from that contract. That's an example of you identified a problem that the bureaus didn't understand why the boilerplate was there, and that led to troubles, and you've got a strategy for dealing with it. So I want to compliment you on that.
Thank you. Other questions for Jack, Jane? Great. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else that signed up to testify on this item?
No one else signed up.
Okay. So we can vote on acceptance of the report by resolution.
Fish?
Jack, thanks to you and your team for the preparation of this document. And I note at page 42 and 43, you list under acknowledgments all the Bureau leaders, staff leaders, and community members that participated in this process. And there's a photograph. And obviously a lot of people have spent a lot of time sharpening your plan. And I think the exchange with Commissioner Fritz underscores that it is a living document, and that we are not today embracing each and every provision, but we are accepting the outline of your strategic plan, and we look forward to working with you to implement this plan. So thank you for your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Jack also for your leadership. I think this is really one of your many manifestations of your tenure as the Director of Office of Management Finance. It seems like a good, solid plan. I like how it connects with, you know, taking the five-year plan and connecting it with individual business plans for each organization under your rubric. So I think this is well thought out, certainly well vetted, extensive process involved, and I appreciate it very much. So thank you. Aye.
Novick?
Again, thanks very much for all your work on this. I mean, everybody in politics likes to bash administration, but everybody gets in trouble when administration is not well done. So we appreciate your efforts to make sure that the administration of the city is done so well that nobody notices. Thank you. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thank you for your work on this. As with many of these kinds of processes, it's the process as well as the product that is valuable. So I know that your staff and others have been involved in this and just thinking about what do we do, how do we do it, why do we do it, and what motivates us to keep doing it and to do it better is certainly a good process. I'm interested also in the strategy, too, regarding bureau directors giving counsel, getting together across silos and coordinating advice to council, and that would certainly be welcome. I do hope, and this is more a note to my fellow members of the council than this particular example, my question regarding has the Office of Equity agreed to implement the strategy that I highlighted reminded me of when we did the Fire Bureau's strategic plan, and there was also some bureaus that were mentioned in that as implementers that didn't know that they were involved in that. So I think as we, it's good to do this kind of planning work, and it's also important to make sure that the other bureaus that we get beyond the silos, and that when it comes to council, the commissioner in charge is well aware, all of the commissioners in charge are aware of and have agreed to implement their piece of the puzzle, because ultimately we are one picture that needs to provide seamless delivery to the citizens of Portland, and I appreciate what the Office of Management and Finance does in that regard. Aye.
Hales.
You know, the Office of Management and Finance is a big, complex service business, and I think this is a good effort to make sure we understand the purposes, the customers, the signals that we have to hear and respond to from the public and from all the bureaus that are the customers of OMF. So because OMF is a big, complex service business and a monopoly, it's especially important that we document what we're trying to accomplish in terms of culture and approach, and that's what this plan does. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I reflect occasionally now that I've re-immersed myself in the public sector on the differences and similarities between this kind of strategic planning that's done in a big, complex private business and here. And I think you've captured the elements that a city in a monopoly set of services for ourselves and for the community has to pay attention to, and the issues and objectives that we're trying to accomplish. So I know, you know, you and I both spent some time trying to think through those issues of how do we do strategic planning, how do we change culture in big, large, complex public organizations. And if you don't have a guide, and if you don't have something to refer to and say, wait a minute, remember, we're trying to accomplish this, it makes it very hard to stay focused and to make progress. So this will enable us to do that, and I appreciate the good work that you and a much larger team of folks have all put into this. Thank you. Aye. Thanks. Well done.
Thank you.
Okay. We are at time certain, 4:54.
Approve agreement between the City and Rip City Management, LLC, doing business as Portland Arena Management, for the continuing operation of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and Rose Quarter public parking facilities.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. So I'm going to say good morning again, and for the record, I'm going to say my name again, Jack Graham, Chief Administrative Officer. Today I have with me Betsy Ames from my office and Chris Oxley from Portland Arena Management, referred to as PAM. Today we will present an agreement between the city and PAM regarding the continuation of the operations and management for the Veteran Memorial Coliseum and the city's parking facilities in the Rose Quarter. I assigned Betsy as the lead for our negotiations. She has worked with Susan Hardnick, the Spectators Facilities and Development Manager, and Mark Moline from the City Attorney's Office on the negotiations with the PAM team led by Chris Oxley. While Betsy will highlight a number of the key terms of the agreement, I just wanted to provide a little context. The city has had a 20-year relationship with PAM and its predecessors in managing the Coliseum, and we are pleased to have this relationship move forward today with the Second Amendment to the Coliseum Operating Agreement. PAM worked with the city and our partners diligently over the past several years to consider the future of the entire Rhodes Quarter and to develop a set of agreements to renovate the Coliseum. While the work from those prior negotiations didn't move forward for a number of reasons, PAM has continued to be engaged with the city and has agreed to continue to operate the Coliseum, which will allow us the time needed to further consider an alternative renovation project for the future of the Coliseum. Our focus today and over the last several months have been on the operating agreement for which we are asking your approval today. I would now like to turn the presentation over to Betsy Ames, who will walk you through some of the highlights of the terms of the agreement with some comments to be followed by Chris Oxley.
Good morning. Betsy Ames with the Office of Management and Finance. We have a PowerPoint that it's showing now.
This was pretty.
Back in November, OMF was before you with a set of agreements for the redevelopment of the Coliseum, and there was a whole set of agreements at that time, including a redevelopment project, project funding agreements, revenue sharing agreements, and others. And for a number of reasons, that set of agreements did not move forward. And at that time, it was a very complicated set of agreements, including an operating agreement.
You're saying that slide of 2012 is a complicated set of agreements?
Yes, it is.
I would say that's an understatement.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
After that set of agreements did not move forward, we proposed a new approach to look at both the operations and renovation of the Coliseum, breaking it out into discrete pieces. This is the new schedule and approach that we're taking with the operating agreement that you have before you today as the first step in that agreement. As noted by Jack, we have been focusing almost exclusively on that second amendment to the operating agreement over the last several months. And we're here today with the agreement that allows us to have the Coliseum continue to be operated by Portland Arena Management, and also extends the operations of our parking facilities over there, which includes two public garages and a parking lot. The key terms of the agreement include one two-year extension with additional options to extend for the full life of what were the options under the original operating agreement entered into in 1993, which provided extension options to June 30th of 2023. Depending on whether we have a renovation project that is agreed to in the next couple years, PAM will have the options to extend for 3 and 5 years. If there is no renovation option, we both have the option of rolling one-year extensions moving forward. For some of the key terms that are in the operating agreement that are different from the existing operating agreement include an increase for the city's repair and maintenance budget to $500,000. This acknowledges the fact that the building doesn't have some of the major renovations that are needed to make it a fully functioning facility, and that we need to continue to invest in it during this time that we're considering the larger renovation project. Net operating losses have been covered by PAM for the last 20 years. As part of this agreement, we're agreeing to share those losses up to $250,000 each per year. Beyond that would be PAM's responsibilities. We, as most of you know, I think, invested in a new ice floor for the Coliseum as a early phase of implementation of the renovation project. The Portland Winterhawks, as part of our discussions with them, have agreed to pay $50,000 per year for the next 2 years as an ice floor surcharge to help the City Spectator Fund and be able to allow us to invest a little bit more in the building. That is passed along to the Winterhawks through this operating agreement before you today. We also have, Pam has agreed to provide a rebate of some of the revenues that they receive for Winterhawks games at both the Rose Garden and the VMC. This will also help the bottom line of the Coliseum. The VMC allocation is a small change to how we allocate the shared campus costs between the Rose Garden and the VMC. Pam has significant staff that are managing not just the Coliseum, but managing the operations of the whole campus in a coordinated fashion. Box office staff, management staff, and others, and we have agreed to allocate 10% of those shared campus costs to the VMC operating expenses, up from 8%, to better reflect the commitment that they have made to our facility. Lastly, there are some updates to indemnification insurance provisions and some other administrative sections of the agreement. I'm going to turn it over to Chris Oxley, and then if you have any questions afterwards, you can ask away.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Hales, Commissioners. Again, my name is Chris Oxley. I'm the Vice President, General Manager for the Rose Quarter for Portland Arena Management. On behalf of Portland Arena Management and the Trailblazers, I'm here to speak in support of Council action to approve the Second Amendment of the VMC operating agreement, not to be understated again, but there's been clearly been significant amount of time and consideration given to the future of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. Through all of this, we still share a mutual goal of revitalizing this historic community asset. Many of you on Council have given a lot of thought and energy towards resolving a very complex set of issues around the VMC. We see today's action as an important step towards resolution of an issue that has gone unresolved for far too long. In cooperation with OMF and what you've seen today, we've developed a thoughtful and detailed plan to build upon all of the work that's been done, which will also allow us to continue the conversation about what is possible. We still see the revitalization of the VMC as a critical step in laying the foundation for all that is possible with the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and the Rose Quarter at large. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank Council for their continued support and advocacy of sports and entertainment facilities in our community. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions along with Jack and Betsy.
Mr. Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. And thank you, Betsy and your team. Mr. Director, for the briefing you gave me on this very complicated matter. And there's a couple of things we talked about privately, which I think would ought to be discussed publicly so that we have a clear understanding of what we're doing going forward. My first question is to Chris. And I guess what we all want to know is you've got the number 10 pick in the draft. You're going to trade it, or are you going to get a big? Can you give us a hint, give us a sense?
What are you doing for lunch? Maybe we can catch up or have a deeper in-depth conversation. But we're looking forward to, truly, we're looking forward to some good times ahead with what we're doing with the franchise. And hopefully that's going to be embraced by the city, because this is a very exciting time for us on a lot of levels.
So thank you. And good luck with that.
Thank you.
So, Jack, big picture. First question that we're going to get asked about this is, if we don't take this action today, what's the alternative? So would you make that crystal clear for the Council?
I think if we don't take this action today, it's going to put things in jeopardy for us moving forward to making some further decisions through consultation with Council. I think that right now we are at a point where we will not have an operator for the VMC. And this is at a point in time in which we are in dire need to continue the work that we need to have done. It would require OMF to redirect all its energy on to just making some decisions on how we would continue to keep the building open, which would distract from us doing the work that is needed in order to bring forth to council some recommendations for the future of the Coliseum. So I see this as a critical point. The agreement is ending June 30th, and so we're at a point in time which we need to move forward with this here, with this operating agreement.
So, Jack, just to put a fine point on it, and putting aside the merits of the deal, which we're going to talk about for a moment, in a moment, if we don't extend this agreement, A, we would not have an operator after June 30th, and B, there is a probability that we'd have to mothball VMC until we get this worked out. Is that correct?
That would be one of the options that council would have in front of them.
Okay. The second question I'd like to ask you is, when we last fall, we last had a substantive discussion about the future of Veterans Memorial Coliseum. One thing that blew us off course a little bit was the sanctions that were announced against the Winterhawks. And that called into question whether we were going to be able to strike a deal with the Winterhawks and the future of that partnership. Can you give us an update on that? Will there come a time when we're going to have greater clarity about the impact of what the league has done on our ability to strike a deal?
I'm going to defer to the Betsy on that. I'll just say at the offset is that, you know, as it relates to the sanctions, you know, we don't have a lot of detailed information on that. I would personally be cautious to say what that relationship is with the Hawks and the sanctions with the organization. But, Betsy, if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, we met with Doug Piper, the president of the Portland Winterhawks, several weeks ago, described the approach that we were taking. Doug indicated that he thought it was a wise approach, breaking it out into the discrete chunks or discrete pieces for consideration. He indicated that he and his owner are still very interested in moving forward. And as noted, he agreed that they would contribute $50,000 per year over the next 2 years for the ice floor surcharge. And I think they see that as a kind of down payment on their larger contribution that they'd like to make to the building.
At the point in which you reengage the council about the bigger picture future, I think we're going to need to have clarity about the league's actions and its impact on the franchise.
You may know they're playing in the Memorial Cup today. So they've had a very successful season this year. I think it's either the winningest season in their league's history or
yeah. I just have two more questions. This one's for Mr. Oxley. One of the criticisms that has come up in the past about the relationship with PAM that I've gotten emails about, so I'm not saying this is my concern, but I want to give you a chance to address it, is that under our agreement, there may not be adequate protections to protect the city against PAM moving certain events to the Rose Garden, where there's a different financial structure to the deal, than to have those events occur at VMC. Without going too deep into this, this becomes a slightly greater concern under the Second Amendment, because the city's net operating loss exposure has been bumped up. So what assurances can you give us that as the operator, there will not be an incentive under this deal for PAM to move events to the Rose Garden in order to maximize profits under a different deal?
Certainly. We've heard that as part of the now closed stakeholder advisory committee looking at the Rose Quarter. I think we've addressed those through that conversation, but I'd be happy to tell you kind of how we do things. We don't make those decisions. We allow our promoters to make those decisions. There's clearly a big difference between the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and the Rose Garden in a lot of ways. The VMC is a very utilitarian venue. While we have operating losses, it's a less expensive venue to operate. There is certainly a price differential as a consumer between the two. They make those choices for themselves. We don't direct events one way or another. That's up for the promoters to decide into which venue they want to contract based on the dates that are available. One of the nice opportunities that we have that's unique to the city that you don't see in a lot of cities anymore is the ability to look at two venues, particularly side by side. As this deal is structured, I think part of the conversation for how we got here was that we'd be on the hook at $1 along with the city. We've been there for, you know, at 100% for the last 20 years. We're at $1, so, you know, 50% of everything that we're doing, and anything beyond that is Pam's responsibility too. I think that was pretty clear in a lot of the negotiations that they wanted us to remain a stakeholder in this from $1, and then obviously not jeopardize any risk to the general fund so that Pam would have that ultimate responsibility beyond that loss. I think we've resolved that, in my opinion, around how this deal is structured in that regard. We could have done this very differently to where, you know, either the city or Pam was responsible for that first set of losses potentially, and that was a discussion that we had when we were negotiating this deal. This seemed to be the most equitable way of dealing with that situation. You know, and the way the budget came back for this fiscal year, which OMF has, and, you know, they're not necessarily seeing a significant change as it relates to how those events are structured as well. And that continues with the Winterhawks.
So that's one way we can fly-spec this, is looking at the budgets
certainly
year to year to see whether there's a change in venue. So just one other question, Mayor, if I could, that's related to our risk. The Second Amendment, quote, updates the indemnification and insurance provisions, which is polite language for we're assuming some exposure there or putting them under our umbrella. And typically, in a lot of our areas, we're self-insured. So are we talking about insurance exposure here that's self-insured or covered under a liability policy? And then what is the extent of our exposure?
The changes to the insurance provisions, in particular, were changing some language that requires PAM to have their contractors and subcontractors list the city as an additional insured on those subcontracts. The agreement also requires PAM to have insurance, liability and property insurance for the building, which is covered by PAM. Some of the indemnification changes that we made were in response to PAM's request that we indemnify them for the actions of city and city-related persons. So previously there was indemnification by PAM for us, but not in the reverse for any of our conduct, acts, or omissions.
And that seems fair for anything that's attributable to our negligence.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the insurance provisions, so are we taking on any additional risk to the updating of insurance?
I don't believe so.
And Jack, you want to?
No, I would say that you know, we have not had to go out and purchase any additional insurance. Our liability insurance was still kind of under the tort liability fund, self-insurance fund. So I think that, as Betsy said, is that the major shift in this here was, I think, from Pam's perspective, is a more of an equitable type of a relationship in terms of them not having to be responsible for negligence at some parts of the city.
And, Jack, the last question I had to do with the term. And it talks about a 2-year extension with additional options. Just to be clear, if the city decides to go an entirely different direction with VMC at some point, is there any limitation in this agreement on our right upon notice to cancel?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mayor, if I might just follow up on Commissioner Fisher's questions to clarify. It seems we're abdicating control over future operating agreement amendments unless they, quote, substantially alter the financial obligations of the city. Do we have a definition for what substantially means in this context?
You're referring to a paragraph about the CAO. I think that's boilerplate language from other agreements as well. As far as the CAOs.
Do we have a sense of what substantially alter?
I would say increase our financial obligations would be substantially.
So anything beyond a de minimis couple of thousand?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So that's exactly. The legislative intent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Good point. Other questions? Other comments from council? Great. Thank you. Good presentation. Are there others that are signed up to testify on this?
No one else signed up.
And this, I believe, is an emergency. So let's take a roll call.
I don't think it is.
Fish.
Well, thank you all for the presentation. Mr. Oxley, thank you for the partnership.
Certainly.
And good luck with the team.
Thank you.
I like the column in today's newspaper about we hope that we don't have to send any more players to those lottery things.
Right.
But we're putting banners up and not in the lottery. But congratulations
on the
year you had, and we wish you the best of success.
Thank you very much.
You mentioned about having the luxury of two venues side by side, and I reminded that we have a basketball tournament coming up in a couple of years that is the result of a relationship with Nike. That is the envy of the country, and we really wouldn't be able to stage that if we didn't have more than one venue at that location. So we get the benefit. I think the challenge is we've had a lot of fits and starts on figuring out the future of the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. We resolved the question of preserving it, and I was proud to cast a vote to preserve it, even though there were others who thought we should demolish it. And then we renamed it, and now the question is, how do we make it sustainable, and how does it fit within a overall vision for a Rose Quarter, which is activated? And I think, Mayor Hales, you said that in the next phase of your priorities, PDC is one of the big six. And I realize that raises big questions about urban renewal, tax increment financing dollars, how you generate revenues. But I think we have a chance in the Rose Quarter as we rethink this to perhaps thread a needle where we can find a way to make the Memorial Coliseum self-sustaining while also jump-starting that entertainment district, which right now is not a 24/7 district, and potentially create a revenue stream for PDC to do sort of job creation more generally. So I know it's a challenge, and this is the umpteenth time we've revisited this, but the reason I'm going to vote yes today is Jack and Betsy convinced me it's in the city's best interest when the options aren't so great, to continue to have a professional operator manage the building as we sort through the questions about the future of the Rose Quarter. So I appreciate the work you've done, and I'm hoping that we can crack this nut sooner rather than later. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to thank Portland Arena Management and OMF for bringing this, I guess I would call it sort of a bridge operating agreement forward. And I hope it will get us through the transition as all the pieces will fall into place, that we can make sure that the Veterans Memorial Coliseum remains a viable location and venue for not only the Winterhawks, but all the many other activities that are well suited to the Coliseum. So thank you all. Aye.
Novick.
Thank you for the presentation and for the work. And I also want to thank Chris for helping guide me through a tour of the building a couple of weeks ago, a tour which I have to say was rather sobering. Aye.
Fritz.
Well, thanks particularly to Betsy Ames for leading the city's work on this, and also to Chief Administrative Officer Jack Graham and Mayor Hales for giving her the authority to do that. I think that made it much more clear how the city and who was speaking for the city, so I very much appreciate that. And your leadership on that, all three of you, and the partners that Portland Arena Management much appreciated. I'm very glad we're getting to this first step. As we all know, it's been a very difficult process to get here, and breaking it into the three components is the way to go. I support this proposal, and I urge us all to put some urgency into getting the remaining two steps done, as Commissioner Fish mentioned, with the nation is going to be visiting us in a couple of years. And so I believe that the Veterans Memorial Coliseum is a fitting tribute to our veterans, as well as a wonderful showcase for everything that, or many things that are good about Portland. So I hope that we can make the renovations that are necessary and continue to support all of the activities that go on in the Rose Quarter. Aye.
Hales.
Well, as this discussion, I think, is reaffirmed, there are still obviously a lot of questions about the Memorial Veterans Memorial Coliseum, big questions. And we haven't answered them yet, but we do need to answer them. And the way to get there from here is a constructive partnership with a competent operator, and that's what we have. So I appreciate the good work that's gone into this. I appreciate the spirit of partnership that we have with PAM, and I think that that's a foundational step, very important one, for getting to those bigger questions. So there was an oil change joint in town that used to have a slogan that says, we don't want to change the world, we just want to change your oil. So that's what we've done here. We've changed the oil in a good partnership, you know, equipped it to keep moving forward while we take the trip to these bigger questions. So thank you for good work. Look forward to the next stage. Aye.
Thank you all very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. We are at item 455. Jack gets to get up and be replaced by one of his team, but not get far away. So thank you.
455, reaffirm city interest to maximize investment in city-owned facilities and direct the Office of Management and Finance to fully implement ADM 13.01.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor, and good morning, City Commissioners. How are you?
Can you press the button in front of you, Brent?
On that, yeah, there you go, Brian. Yeah.
Good morning. I am Brian Anshin, Director of Internal Business Services, and with me I have
Robert Keita, Facility Manager with Bureau of Internal Business Services.
For your consideration this morning is a resolution reaffirming the city's interest to maximize investment in city-owned facilities. This morning, we're going to present a space proposal to you that will assist the city in implementing Administrative Rule 13.01, where it is the city's intent of the city to maintain full occupancy and provide for city bureau space needs in-house and not to lease external space unless city needs cannot be met. The specific objectives that this proposal will present to you is maximize use of city-owned space, minimize the need for lease space, generate savings, build the major maintenance reserve, address concerns in the auditor's downtown office space report without requiring additional general fund resources. I'm just going to give you a brief overview in terms of what you'll see in this presentation. We're going to review city space policies, review the city's current office space inventory, present the city's five-year office space proposal, show a coordinated plan to reduce the need for leased space, review guidelines for developing space standards, identify potential savings, and review next steps. There are several city policies concerning leasing external space. Administrative Rule 13.01, intent is to first look in-house to meet City Bureau space needs and not to lease external space unless city needs cannot be reasonably met. The Arts and Cultural Policies and Administrative Rule 3.01 reaffirms that the city-owned buildings would be given preference, but in the event that lease space is required, preference will be given to buildings that are of historic nature. Portland City Code Chapter 3.15 provides for OMF to execute real property agreements, including leases. The proposed resolution that you have in front of you today reaffirms these city policies. I would like Bob now to review the city's current office inventory with you.
Okay. The city has two main sources for its office space. Primarily located in the downtown core, we have city-owned and private lease properties. The red arrows and titles indicate the space that is leased, while the black represents our owned buildings. We also have available office space located just outside the downtown core area in southeast and southwest Portland. Go ahead. Our total office space inventory provides a high-level look at the city's current office space locations and cost. Please note that this does not include office space needs associated with bureaus and or programs such as the police bureau, sewer, Colonia sewer treatment plants, interstate water, and so on. This is really focusing on our downtown offices. If you look at the top line, you'll see that the Jerome Sears Westside Operations Center, you can see the occupant, the total space, the vacant space there, and the cost per square foot. If you move down to a lease building, such as the Commonwealth Building, you will see the occupant, total lease space, and the cost per square foot. At the bottom of the chart is a total inventory and current space needs deficit if we were to only occupy our owned space.
Can you keep that slide up for a second?
Back, yeah.
Brian, if you can just go back one. There you go. Now, the Portland, the 1900 building is listed at $30.72 a square foot. Does that build in the bond payments?
Yes, that includes the debt payment.
Okay, and those bonds are retired in?
2018.
2018, and what does that drop to once the bonds are repaid?
It'll drop to the same rate. Basically, we're paying the Portland building around currently
$15.60 a square foot.
Okay, so I think that's an important qualification because it you would look at this and think that actually we should probably keep all the other space. So that's the dividend that is about to accrue.
Absolutely.
And since we're on that point, can you tell me emphatically that there are currently no discussions about us selling or transferring ownership of that building to any third party?
Yes. We are not in any discussion at this time with anyone to sell or lease any of the Portland 1900 building.
And is it our current plan to keep that as city-owned space?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a secondary effect in addition to the one that you noted, which is not only will that lease rate drop when those bonds are paid off, but we're paying ourselves.
Correct.
And that has a salutary effect on overhead rates, obviously, the closer to full occupancy that we get.
So the line item that says space deficit, if all city-owned space occupied, I guess I'm not tracking what that means.
That would actually be how much space we need in addition to owned space if we were to only use our existing or owned space.
So we would need 51,000 square feet over and above what we currently have available?
That's
if we
correct.
Were to
correct.
Put everybody, okay.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Okay, thanks.
Our at-a-glance slide for 2013 shows the layout like this. The buildings to the left of the gray center delineating line are our own buildings, while to the right you'll see the leased buildings. You'll note that the Portland building shows up on both sides of this line due to the county's perpetual ownership rights to the 14th and 15th floor, the lease ownership rights, of which we lease back from the county the 14th floor. The light blue shows the city-occupied space. The yellow shows the vacant space. Green is the county-owned space in a condominium justice center, and brown is the PSU ownership in a condominium we have with PSU. On the lease side of the line, the taupe color is the private-owned and occupied spaces. Focusing just on our current outlease properties, you will see that we have varying terms, expiration dates, and cost ranging from the Portland building expiring June 30th of this year for a combined lease cost total of $440,000 to the Harrison building, FPDNR's, expiring in July of 2017 for $177,000. This provides us with two opportunities. First is to phase in conjunction with those expiration dates, this plan, and second is to redirect over $2 million back into city-owned assets. On this chart, the historic and projected rental rates show the increasing costs related to leasing private office space and the ability to better control these costs by owning our buildings. The Portland downtown core rental rates are reflected in the red line, while the city-owned space is captured in the dark blue line. The light blue shows the parallel between the city lease space and the downtown market. So here's a closer view of how each of our owned locations are occupied currently. Note, in City Hall, the yellow vacant space and the retail space on the first floor. In the Portland building, note the vacant space and the space we lease on the 14th floor, or the vacant space throughout the building on the 14th floor. Again, in the 1900 building, you'll see vacant space in different parts of the building. And then lastly, these are our latest acquisitions to our owned portfolio, both purchased and under construction and increases our available space capacity significantly. In summary, the city owns approximately 620,000 square feet of office space, which is 95% occupied, resulting in a vacant space of about 40,000 square feet at the annual cost of around 778,000 square feet. Under the current space use configuration, by 2016, if we were to do nothing but keep leasing and owning as we do, we'd be spending an estimated $2.3 million annually on 99,000 square feet of leased space. The audit report of the downtown office space recommended strengthening and clarifying existing policies around office space utilization and having Facility Services institute some administrative improvements. Leased space costs continue to increase, and market projections should suggest a continued rising trend. Historic information shows that the best way to control the city space cost is through ownership. And based on our survey information from each bureau, the five-year outlook does not show significant growth within the city bureaus, with the exception of the Development Services Bureau, who is having growth in the building department, of course. Vacant space reduces the major maintenance reserve funds, which are already significantly lower than the 3% target rate needed to maintain the city's buildings assets. We're currently about 1.6%. And outleases are set to expire within the next 2 months and over the next 4 years. The proposed plan will bring out leases into city-owned space in a planned and systematic process.
So now we'd like to present the city's five-year office space use proposal. The actions to reduce the need for needed to reduce the need for lease space includes: use existing city space to relocate city operations from lease spaces to vacant city space. Expand this portfolio of city-owned space to relocate city operation from lease space, adopt space standards to better utilize space, and establish a cooperative partnership with Multnomah County to consider multi-agency co-locating and co-development opportunities. The city currently has approximately 40,000 square feet of vacant space. Expanding the city's portfolio along with the existing vacant space, we believe we could relocate city operations that are currently in lease spaces. We propose exploring the option to purchase the 14th and 15th floors of the Portland building from Multnomah County. This would expand the city space portfolio by 41,000 square feet.
And that 40, excuse me, Brian, just so to follow Commissioner Saltzman's question, that 41,000 would cover all but 10,000 of the space deficit that you identified previously.
And you're absolutely right, Commissioner Fisher. One of the things that Bob shared with you is that we do have some additional space that we have not programmed as part of this current space proposal, because we want to work through the first phase and then start working with the bureaus in terms of finding fits at some of the other facilities, such as the Kelly Building and also the Jerome Sears Building.
Right, but just because we're getting a lot of data here, and just so we're laser focused, the 51,000 square feet of deficit on page 7 that you've identified, if everybody is housed in city-owned buildings, 41,000 of that 51,000 could be addressed through this proposal to purchase the 14th and 15th floors from Multnomah County.
Absolutely. So we could address 41,000 square feet just in the Portland building, and then what we would do is identify what we could do in terms of the right fit in both the Kelly building and also the Jerome Sears building.
So another action item we are using to implement this plan is the development of space standards. Currently, there are no citywide adopted standards for space use. The average space use per employee, including the aisles, file storage, meeting rooms, et cetera, is about 210 square feet per employee. Industry best practice for office space use per employee is 190 square feet and trending downward. Some bureaus within the city are currently utilizing space use designs which meet and exceed the downward trending best practices by using new workspace strategies such as hoteling and shared workstations, which result in fewer workstations, smaller informal meeting spaces leading to fewer larger conference rooms, new smaller technology resulting in smaller workstations. And an example of this would be in BDS, where we have the inspectors who used to have 30-inch workstations, wide workstations, to handle a full set of blueprints. This work is now being done on flat screens on their workstations, so it reduces the amount of space actually needed. And then one of our favorites, last time we were before council with the space plan, was to move, what was accepted was moving the treasury and debt over to OMF on the 12th floor. We actually were able to accomplish that by adopting a 25% file storage reduction on the floor. We lost no staffing. We didn't shrink any cubicle sizes. We simply set a target. We actually exceeded that target and were able to move the debt treasury into our space with very little movement or change as far as the working space for everybody else. Please note that the utilization of these strategies do not automatically translate to smaller cubicles. There are several things that come into play before we actually would look at that. The new guidelines will emphasize equity, spaces allocate, or consistency, efficiency, flexibility, and sustainability. Simply increasing space use efficiency by as little as 10% within our own spaces, and that's 620,000 square feet, will add significant growth potential within our existing footprint. There are many ways to implement these recommendations, but our plan is to follow these guidelines wherever possible. Commitment to keep the bureaus looped into the process, coordinate the moves with lease expiration schedule, and address current and projected space needs, minimize the move cost, the moves and the cost. And I want to emphasize that we don't want to move folks unless we need to, because it is a direct impact on cost. So we want to definitely minimize. But where we do have to make moves, we want to maximize the adjacency. Flexibility to meet our future requirements, and then ensuring the identification removal of barriers as we actually get into the space design on each floor. Implementation of these recommendations in our at-a-glance view would significantly reduce our dependency on leased out-leased properties. You'll now notice that by 2016, the city's own properties will be fully occupied while the need for leased properties is almost eliminated. We've met with each bureau to begin the discussions of the concepts as we move forward here. Now let's take a look at how we can maximize the city-owned space. City Hall first floor space is currently in the process of being designed and construction to meet the city attorney's office expansion needs. We expect to have them into this space by this summer. The Portland building, purchase of the 14th and 15th floor, begins our ability to restack the building, bringing multiple leases and maximizing space use over the next 3 to 4 years. You'll notice with just a few moves, We create Water Bureau adjacency, the main body of BTS. Go ahead and click that again. Moves onto one floor, and BES is all located within the same building. EBS also joins OMF on the 12th floor.
Did you say BES is all located?
In the Portland building, that's correct. We'll have a few more clicks as we're going through, and it'll get caught up with what I just read. So we brought the Children's Investment Fund in. We brought BTS from the 1900 building in. We've done a couple minor restacks within the building to create space and adjacencies as we move forward. And then the final piece of that, we'll go to the 1900 building. And then with relatively few moves at the 1900 building, we'll create the space needed for the new location of the Revenue Bureau. We move BTS over to the Portland building. We move BDS down to the space that currently BTS is in, and we've created a full floor for Revenue Bureau. Then the final piece of the Portland building phase of restacking occurs when the county and the state vacate the 15th floor and we move BES and OEHR into the Portland building. So BES would then take over the 15th floor.
That's their lease. Yeah.
And then OEHR would move into the 14th floor along with BTS and some vacant space there. Also in here you see this Kelly Building, Sears, ECC. You can see that even after the completion of this phase of the plan, we still have office space available. And Commissioner Fish, I think this really starts addressing what you were asking a moment ago, Brian. The remaining available space may not be the best fit for all bureaus and or programs, so additional work will continue to determine how best to fill these remaining spaces. Combining the next phase along with the citywide implementation of the space standard will allow completion of the move of all leased space into the city-owned buildings. So you'll notice a lot of vacant spaces. Keep moving forward.
The average lease cost is about $3.73 more per square foot. If you were to multiply this by the lease space in 2013-2014, the total difference is approximately $283,000. This is on top of the cost, as Bob shared with you earlier, in terms of when we have an occupied space, it costs us money for that unoccupied space. And in 2011-2012, it was $778,000. If you would look at it in terms of over a five-year forecast, the difference would be roughly about $1.5 million. And if you expand it for a period of two five-year forecasts, or specifically 10 years, the difference would be roughly about $5 million. To implement this proposal, there would be a need for some one-time funding. This funding would not be required to come from the additional, or would require additional general fund. We would finance the acquisition, the tenant improvements, and the move costs. We would use the difference between the lease costs and the cost of city space to repay the financing. This would be a multi-year financing to coincide with the expiration of the leases. So again, we would relocate city operations as the leases expires. So if council approves of these actions, these would be the following steps. Explore the purchase of the 14th and 15th floor with Multnomah County. Finalize the space plan and space standards, develop a financing plan, return to council and present documents for their approval, and move forward with the implementation of the space plan. That is the end of our presentation. We would welcome any questions.
Does the county currently use any of the 14th and 15th floor?
We currently have support enforcement, dispute resolution in the tax supervisor office on the 15th floor. The city actually leases back the entire 14th floor.
Okay.
Other questions?
I just wanted to put on the record the discussions that we've had before about the possibility that employees will see amount of space per employee going down and think that this is the pack everybody in like sardines plan. And you've said that you think that you can achieve that goal by doing things like reducing the number of large conference rooms, but there are references in the PowerPoint to things like, you know, smaller technology results in smaller workstations. I just want to give you a chance to reassure people that you're going to be working with employees and with unions on the issue of reducing space per employee, that you do think that you'll be able to accomplish that without squeezing people into small spaces.
That is correct, Commissioner Novak. We will continue to work with the bureaus as we move forward to finalizing the final space plan. Please, Mr.
Mitchell. Thanks for an excellent presentation. One of the big question marks that hangs over this whole process is the cost to the city of updating and repairing the Portland building. And since we're proposing to consolidate a lot of space and functions in a building that's had a troubled past, could you touch on a little bit what's the worst case scenario in terms of our the cost of updating and repairing the building?
You want that?
Yes, sir. So currently we have studies underway that address both the building envelope issue, which is water infiltration, as well as the structural and seismic issues with the building. You know, the problems that we are investigating are not new problems. They've existed since the building was built, and there have been multiple studies, and there's been lots of work done to try to address the situations. We took a more comprehensive approach to look at these and say, you know, what would it take to do this thing once and for all so that we can, you know, have a building that we can count on, you know, in the case of a seismic event, as well as something that we can not have the water issues with that we've been plagued with since the building was built. The reports basically indicate that because the building was so new in its design when it was built, that to marry so many different materials together, you have glass storefront, stucco, ceramic tile, metal, and glass itself put together without good design. It was too new when it was designed, or when it was designed with those materials, to really have good connectors. So we're looking at what it would take to actually skin the building and then put a waterproof membrane behind everything and then rebuild the exterior of the building. That we're at this point early low confidence or early estimates with high contingency is at $25 million. The additional work that we're looking at is seismic. We've been assured that, you know, the building, while built to, you know, codes of when it was built, codes have changed significantly. We're looking in the seismic. If we were to use this opportunity